my room. On the fence by my house on Hagamel Street, someone has written in black marker pen, "The Tide Mark of Loneliness." I can't help smiling and ask myself, is that the name of a band or the title of a poetry collection? How does the tide mark of loneliness manifest itself? Have I ever been there and looked out to sea? At least it seems likely that you'd find the sea somewhere in the vicinity of a tide mark. And although Hagamel is not exactly tidal, I don't suppose loneliness is an entirely unknown phenomenon there, any more than on any other street. The reason why I've come here to the house where I used to live with my parents, brother, and sister when I was young is that I saw our old apartment advertised and decided to take the chance to go and see it, although of course I've no interest in buying it. Especially not if living here these days you run the risk of being washed up on the dreaded tide mark of loneliness. I simply wanted to revisit my old room where I evolved from a child into a teenager, to put it rather grandly, and where I took many of my most far-reaching decisions, either to the soundtrack of the stereo, a confirmation gift, or wreathed in soft veils of fragrant pipe smoke, though usually with both on the go at once, that's to say, both music and pipe smoke. "Come in," says a weary but friendly woman's voice over the entry phone, once I've explained that I'm the person who was coming round to view the property. "Thanks," I say, and push open the door. So it was here, I think, as I look up the communal staircase to the second and third floors. This is where it all happened. We lived on the third floor. At a rough estimate, I've walked up these stairs maybe 8,000 to 9,000 times, and been down them just as often, I expect. Random memories stir in my mind as I climb the stairs for the first time in 24 years, and when the present owner of the apartment opens the door and invites me in, these memories literally awaken and leap up like a living person. I think I can smell the same old smell. But when I enter the hall, this gives way before a heavy odor of cooking, an odor that, instead of whetting my appetite, puts me off the thought of food altogether. Where there used to be a mirror between the kitchen door and the door that opened into the dining room, a mirror that always held the image of my little cousin after he made a face in it a few days before he died, there's now a watercolor of a row of houses that seems familiar from here in town. The people who live here now probably don't make a point of checking out their faces before leaving the house. "I suppose I should begin by showing you the master bedroom and the bathroom," says the woman who let me in. At a guess, she's around 50, with attractive features marred by a look of exhaustion. She clearly hasn't been getting enough sleep. I suddenly feel really bad that she should be making something in the kitchen that smells so horrible. Before I follow her down the corridor to the master bedroom, I notice that my old room, which is beside the door to the stairwell, directly opposite where the mirror used to be, is shut, and so is the door to the living room. "Then there's a child's room here next to the bedroom," says the woman. But when she opens the door, I see that what used to be my brother's orderly abode, he was always at great pains to keep it clean, is now a rather dirty storeroom. There are piles of smelly old newspapers, a jumble of videotapes, plastic bags full of Coke bottles and beer cans, and all kinds of junk that no one seemed to have a use for any longer. "It's really more of a storeroom," says the woman, and shuts the door, obviously unwilling for me to get a better look. Then she shows me the bathroom, which is more or less unchanged since my family lived here, and reasonably clean. And when I enter the bedroom, I get the impression that it's been tidied, and the bed's been made specially for my visit. Though the woman doesn't look the house-proud type, she must have felt it right to have the bedroom unobjectionable in this respect. I have the feeling that something happened there last night that she wanted to obliterate all sign of. Despite using the word unobjectionable about the room, in fact, I do object to just about everything in it. Both furniture and ornaments are so hideously ugly and tasteless that I feel in a flash that our aesthetic sense is the element of our minds that forms the deepest gulf between us and our fellow men. "I'm afraid I can't show you the living room at the moment," says the woman when we return to the hall. She looks at me, her expression turning sad. "You'll have to excuse me," she adds. "Is it being," I ask, meaning is work being done on the living room, redecoration, something of that kind? "It's simply not possible at the moment," repeats the woman. "Well, then there's just this room here," I say cheerfully, with a light tap on the door of my old room. Actually, that'll just have to wait as well, says the woman. But there's the kitchen left. You'll have to excuse the fact that I'm in the middle of cooking. Then there's a storeroom in the attic. You can take a look at that. So you're saying it's not possible to see the room, I ask, aware that my tone is overly astonished. Which, of course, I am, quite apart from being disappointed. Seeing this room was the whole purpose of my visit. I'm sorry, it's just not possible at the moment, says the woman, without seeming particularly sorry. But the apartment is for sale, isn't it? Now I don't try to hide the fact that I find it a bit odd not being allowed to see the property in its entirety. We wouldn't be advertising otherwise, answers the woman, quite directly. Don't you want to look at the kitchen, she asks, with such weariness and indifference that my thoughts go involuntarily to what she's cooking in there. It must be pretty unexciting fare, not just for the taste buds and sense of smell, but for the eye as well. I picture a defunct stew, sort of dark brown with a greenish film, with watery potatoes and vegetables. As I turn down the chance to refresh my memory of the kitchen, I summon up a picture of my old room as it was before we moved. Black ceiling, dark brown walls, a black square on one wall with another smaller square inside, brown like the wall. A wood veneer sofa bed and desk in the same dark color under the window, a black stereo, worn dark red cushion, battered old office chair with arms, piles of records here and there about the room, and Keith Emerson on the wall above the sofa bed, sitting in black leathers astride a black motorbike, with one hand on a black helmet that rested on the gas tank. Keith Emerson, that great magician who made nothing of writing piano concertos, at least one piano concerto, in between hitting the road on his Harley-Davidson and getting his picture taken for English and German teen magazines. It was from one of these that I had cut out the picture that hung on my wall. Did you talk to them at the real estate agents? Asks the woman, and I look at her, unsure whether to answer at random or tell her who I spoke to at the real estate agents. There's no telling what kind of answer she's fishing for. Then all at once there's the sound of glass from the living room, as if someone had put down a glass and it had clinked against another glass, something like that. The woman coughs and looks around at nothing. She's waiting for me to leave. I can't say I want to stay any longer either. I thank her and turn to the door to the landing. Then there's a noise from inside my room as if someone's banged on a table or closet door. And as I take hold of the doorknob, someone shouts, "Tell him to go!" I jump and pause with my hand on the doorknob. The voice on the other side of the door is audibly young, but strangely deep. I imagine that the light's off in the room. When I look the woman in the eyes, I can see that they too are telling me to go. She's doing as she's told. I nod to her, apologetically, turn the knob. It's the same knob as quarter of a century ago, and when I open it onto the landing, the same voice as before shouts, "I need to come out!" Trying to avoid meeting the woman's eyes again, I step over the threshold, but before I close the door, I hear him call even louder, "Mom!" I don't know what exactly I'm leaving behind as I close the door, but it's a relief to be alone on the landing. Before going down the stairs, probably for the last time, I look up the steep, narrow steps to the attic where I could have had a look around if I'd wanted. On the way down, I notice two pictures hanging on the wall by the door to the downstairs apartment that are the same as when we lived here. I should remember, I tell myself, having walked past them nearly 20,000 times, if my calculations are anything to go by. I recall the family who used to live below us. The son was a good friend of mine, and suddenly I find it quite absurd that I haven't heard from them since. Could they possibly still live here? When I rang the doorbell of the woman upstairs, I couldn't see any names, either by the bell or on the front door, but as the same pictures are still on the wall, it's not unlikely that they're still here, at least the parents, who must be getting on by now. But it doesn't have to be that way. I myself left behind the black square with a little brown square inside it on the wall of my room. Actually, it was painted on the wall. And the poster of Keith Emerson? I don't remember taking that with me either when we moved.